Jays stay on the roller coaster to start the season. A blowout loss, a blowout win, and today a medium blowout loss, I suppose. A 9-5 defeat for the Blue Jays at the hands of the Orioles. The bullpen, at least the middle part of the bullpen, getting caved in after Scherzer departs early. And so far through three games of this four-game set, the Jays have been out-homered 10-2. Both home runs on the season to date coming from Andrés Giménez. But a 1-2 start for the Blue Jays this season.
Some pretty wild stats, Joe, to begin this season for the Blue Jays. Not exactly what you would expect. Obviously, a 10-2 about. Not all of it good. Most of it not good. Obviously, we can discuss Bo Bichette. I'm sure that Blue Jays fans are pretty happy with what they're seeing, but this one will probably be remembered by Max Scherzer exiting early and the bullpen not being able to hold on to the lead there, unfortunately, really.
That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, venture feelings, if you like, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well. Lots of texts for us to get to, Jules. 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Mm-hmm. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. I just ask, no cussing, because then we gotta censor it. But
does
that's
apply
the only
to
thing.
Me, too? Or?
Yes. Okay. Especially to you. I've heard how you speak off the air. It's,
fine.
It's wild. It's truly wild. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually only kind of kidding. okay, let's talk about Max Scherzer. Three innings from Scherzer, three hits, two runs, both of which were earned, no walks, one strikeout, but 45 pitches, 28 strikes. So we saw during the bottom of the third inning, the bullpen gets up. Scherzer did not return. There was a shot on the telecast of him looking frustrated, talking to Schneider, kind of roaming around the dugout, and then Richard Lovelady gets up. And I have a lot to say on Lovelady and Barnes, but we'll get there. But the team saying he left due to right lat soreness. And I was concerned early in the game because, again, during the spring, he looked good. Right up until the thumb injury reared its ugly head again, he looked good. The velo looked good. The command looked good. Like, he was touching speeds during the spring that he only touched a handful of times all of last year. And today, the velo on all of his pitches from the get-go, like right from the second pitch of the game, he gives him a home run, a four-seamer that caught a little bit too much of the plate, and the velo was down. So safe to say he's still dealing with something. And it's interesting, right, because the guys were talking about it during the broadcast, the thumb, and is it or is it not related to the lat? But Scherzer himself said that if you have thumb injuries, it can cause other injuries like in your elbow and the rest of your body. So I wonder how connected it is. But, gosh, him leaving after three innings is never a good look.
Yeah, Sho, and you kind of look at, a nerve issue and how connected everything can be, especially when you're talking about the nervous system and muscles and all of that. It's possible that it's connected. It's also possible that it isn't, which doesn't really make this any better, show because it keeps coming back, right? It's not something that is new. It's not something that would have snuck up on the Blue Jays in any way, shape, or form. It's something that that has been on the radar. And obviously, we know that they were pretty optimistic, so much so that Scherzer took the mound today, which was the third game of the season. And obviously, you trust the training staff. You trust the player especially. Scherzer is not someone who is going to either sugarcoat things or try to make things what they are not. He is a very straightforward guy by the accounts of pretty much everyone who has been in contact with him in this league. And everyone thought that it would be okay to have him start today. Now, it wasn't. And there's a legitimate possibility, Sho, that it's not going to be okay in 5 days. So what is the contingency plan here? We've kind of heard some vague statements about that when we have asked in the past. Okay, we have Yariel Rodriguez in the pen who can cover some length, but what is the actual plan here if Scherzer is not ready to go in 5 days? Because we know that the starting depth of this club is not where anyone would like it to be, really. So Is it Yariel coming out of the pen to actually start? Will the Blue Jays rely on Scherzer for around 50 pitches and kind of see what happens from there? Is someone like Jake Bloss going to get a call a little bit earlier than anticipated?
Eric Lauer?
Yeah, someone like that for sure. But then you start looking at a very different level of rotation or tier of rotation than you thought you were going to have when you signed Max Scherzer to that one-year deal. There's just a lot to think about here, Sho, and I, again, I'm sure that the team has contingency plans in place.
I don't know.
We have not heard about it, in clear terms, but it does make you wonder, what is this rotation actually going to look like next week, let alone, in the long term this season?
Yeah, you brought up Weyrod, and, I mean, he got touched up a little on Thursday in relief, so I got to think he is at least the first consideration if you need to like backfill a start. And then you go down the list to Bloss or to Lauer, whoever, really, right? You go down that list. But I just – and again, I'm going to give everyone credit for this. I think we're all thinking the same thing. There's one from – I was just looking at it, actually. Oh, here it is. This is Jason from Thornhill, and he's not the only person who texted it. I'll read the other ones in a sec. But, hey, Show, I hope you had a nice offseason. Can someone explain to me why Ryan Yarbrough – was not good enough for our pen? And I mean, look, I think we were all thinking that today, right? The decision to let Ryan Yarbrough go at the end of spring training, like on the last day of the spring, was not one I think either of us expected or really agreed with at the time. And we're certainly not the only people to have thought that. And it looks even worse now, right?
Yeah.
Because, again, to your point about the bullpen and about how the starting rotation affects the bullpen, I mean, it all trickles down. And It's a decision that I admit is a little baffling, right? I mean, we can talk about the bullpen in relation to this, right? Because I think it's safe to say in like three games, and I think a lot of people felt this way before the season even started, but I think we've all kind of seen enough from Richard Lovelady and Jacob Barnes, right? I mean, I think it's also pretty easy to say that they were probably never going to be particularly long for the roster, right? Mm-hmm. Like it kind of felt like, you know, when Swanson and Burr, one or both of them came back, that those two guys would have, if they were still on the roster at the time, been the first people to go. But, I mean, at this point, call up Mason Fluharty. Like, you know, I was a big fan of Mason Fluharty in the spring. And, I mean, if you want the lefty, outside of Brendan Little, who had the injury scare yesterday. But, gosh, I mean, Lovelady comes in and gives up a double, a strikeout, hit by a pitch, sac fly, a four-pitch walk, and then a three-run double from Ramon Urias in an 0-2 count with two outs, in which Lovelady kind of just throws a ball right over the plate, right? And Barnes wasn't that much better either. And again, neither of them, I don't think anyone believed they were going to be like bullpen stalwarts necessarily, but it's just a tough look, like the texters are saying, like the callers, and we'll get to the callers in a sec, but it's a tough look to go Lovelady to Barnes, give up six runs in two innings and a third, with Yarbrough having been right there with proven results from last year. Like, I got to think that Dylan Tate will take a place in this bullpen pretty soon, maybe even sooner than mid-April, but the Lovelady choice is one that kind of baffles me. Like, even in a more micro sense from this game, Jules,
for sure,
have someone else up and ready to come into the game after Lovelady hits two batters in a row. Yeah. Like, even if it's Jacob Barnes, bring in Jacob Barnes then, instead of leaving Lovelady out there. It's just a tough look for those two guys to be your middle-inning relievers.
That's precisely where my mind went when you just started talking about, you know, the decision to bring them up on the roster. But for today's game, you have the lead, right? You have a lead, which is not easy to come by against this Orioles team, especially when you consider you're expecting to see the big arms in that pen, and the Orioles have been out hitting the Blue Jays for the entire series so far. And so to go with Lovelady with that lead, that fragile lead at that point, and not say, well, then bring in a Chad Green. I know that there is a matter of matchups here and all of that, but that was a pretty, you know, as far as high leverage goes, that was pretty high up there at this point in the season. And if you have well-rested guys that you can call on, even though it is early in the game, that's the time to do it, Sho. You can't just roll with Richard Lovelady and expect things to stay as they are against a team that has been hitting the cover off the baseball. That has been the Orioles so far. You know, save for yesterday, they had a little bit of an off day, but you can't expect that to keep happening. It's just too good of a lineup to count on that, and Blue Jays paid the price for those choices, for sure.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jen in Toronto. Jen, what's up? Welcome to Jays Talk.
Oh, hi. Welcome back.
How's it going, Jen?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be repetitive, I guess, because, but I don't understand the Yarbrough thing. He could eat up like 3-4 innings. Sure. He'll stymie people. The Jays continually do not. I remember since, like, when Marcus Semien was on the team, all we needed was a good bullpen arm. We had a fantastic offense, and we didn't add firepower, and we don't have that. And I see Cano and Soto and then Batista come up. I mean, I know we have Jimmy Garcia and Hoffman, but geez, we keep on doing this. And what the Lovelady thing and the Burns, and you know what I mean? I don't understand what Atkins is doing. Was it Yarbrough? Ditch him to save $1 million. I just want to hear from Atkins about this. But yeah. Like the show, and I'm glad it's not raining too much.
Yeah, thank you, Jen. Appreciate it. Yeah, there was some like ice storm concerns, right. I think, in the GTA. So that's good. I mean, the dome is closed, so yeah. I have no idea what it's like outside.
Yeah,
right,
we appreciate
now, so
the weather report,
that's good.
For sure.
That's, thank you, Jen. I do appreciate it. It is an interesting conversation to have because there are a lot of messages, to Jen's point, Jules, about the bullpen sucks. Like, it hasn't been fixed. And when you look back to last year, it was the relief pitching in the seventh inning or later that really was the issue. Like last year, I think the bullpen relief pitching in particular had an ERA of well over 5 mm-hmm. in the seventh inning or later. So they go out there and they try and alleviate that issue. They get Hoffman and they bring back Jimmy Garcia to help with that. And I do think it will help. I mean, those guys pitched today and they both look pretty good, all things considered, especially Hoffman. The guy, I think, topped out at like 98.6 miles an hour towards the end of his inning of scoreless work there. So you like what you see from Hoffman, but to Jen's point, it just won't matter if the middle inning relief ends up being really bad, because we all talk often about, I mean, the circle of trust, we're going to bring that back this year, but we talk often about the path to the closer, right? Like getting the ball out of the hand of your starter into the hand of your middle relievers, into the hands of your highest leverage relievers, closers or otherwise. And this year, in 3 games, and this includes today, relievers from our pal Mitch Bannon, relievers have allowed 9 runs in 3 games from the 4th inning to the 7th inning. Now, that could be somewhat healed by simply getting better innings from your starter, right? And in 2 of 3 games to start the year, the starting pitcher was out after 5 and 3 innings. So that does not help by any means. But to Jen's point, the middle relief options right now have not looked very good.
Yeah, and listen, a 3-inning start from one of your starters, is that ideal? No. It's also not a surprise here, show. There were signs. There have obviously been things that we have been talking about with Max Scherzer, and that is what's baffling to me. It's that the contingency plan for today was going with Lovelady and Barnes. I just don't think that that is going to cut it, right? It's just not going to cut it, especially when you have someone like Wyrod in the bullpen who could have covered maybe a little bit more length. And sure, he didn't pitch extremely well. We saw what happened on opening day. But this is a guy that, one, was trusted enough last year to make several starts for this team and looked good in quite a few of them. And two, could have covered some innings for you. And maybe you, you know, if you don't want to burn the high leverage guys with the lead that early on, then at least you have a bridge arm up who can provide you with a little bit more length so that you don't have to go through your pen so much. Great. That's just not, that's not what we saw. And that to me is what's baffling. And I think that as long as this Max Scherzer situation is hovering over the Blue Jays, so will the ghost of Ryan Yarbrough, which is pretty interesting to me. I think that the decision to let Yarbrough walk, it could have been pretty innocuous. It could have just flown under the radar. It didn't for obvious reasons. And it is pretty interesting to me that, you know, so far, we talk about Scherzer almost always in the same breath we are talking about Ryan Yarbrough.
And Atkins did say when he spoke to the media that a reason for not keeping Yarbrough was they didn't want two bulk guys. Okay, fine. You don't always need two bulk guys. There are questions about how do you keep them both stretched out if they're not going to be pitching multiple innings like every single game, essentially. I think it's valid to say, but okay, then you still got to get better options than Lovelady and Barnes, unfortunately, right? Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Let's go to Tim right here in Toronto. Tim, what's up? What's on your mind? Welcome to JStock.
Thanks, guys. I don't understand. We have Rodriguez as the long guy, and we didn't put him in. We put in these one-inning guys. And are we paying him like $5 million a year?
Yeah, he is getting paid a decent chunk. I got to look up to see what his contract is exactly. But I got to admit, Tim, I was confused just to not see him at all, right? I do think why Jimmy Garcia and Hoffman, for example, got in here just because they hadn't pitched in a while. But at the same time, I'm as confused as you, man, why Rod didn't get in there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Lovelady doesn't. I think he needs to see Buffalo.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the call, Tim. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us on Jays Talk. Yeah, there's actually a text here. Where was it? There's a text that just said, bye, Lovelady. That's all it says. That's literally the entire text. There's another one from Jane Regina. Lovelady is the new Mitch White, which is tough because I think we were having similar-ish conversations towards the end of Mitch White's tenure as a Blue Jay. But, yeah, I mean, like, they got to replace, to a certain extent, different parts of the bullpen because they fixed one part, let other parts deteriorate to a certain extent to the point where if something like this did happen to a starting pitcher, and it's now happened to Scherzer, it was a concern going back to the last couple weeks of the spring, and now you need to fix it on the fly. And look, the bullpen, I think, is fixable on the fly, and it might even be fixable through internal options, but it does beg the question, like, in the spring, and I feel bad picking on Lovelady, honestly, but, I mean, he did take the loss today, and he gave up 4 earned runs, so kind of no real choice, unfortunately, when your starter leaves with injury. But, I mean, Mason Fluharty, again, I'll bring him up again because you know I was big on him in the spring, a lefty as well, yeah. Right? Like, they were kind of competing for two spots for one spot with each other, Lovelady and Fluharty, maybe also Josh Walker as well, probably someone else in the mix there for that second left-handed relief spot. And they gave it to Lovelady instead. I'm not sure I saw enough in the spring to say, we need to give this guy a 40-man spot and DFA someone else and make a 60-day IL roster moves and do all the procedural things just to keep Lovelady from becoming a free agent, essentially, when you kind of have Mason Fluharty, who had largely pitched pretty well in the minors, certainly this season in the spring, but also in the minors over the last couple seasons.
Right. And listen, we are not, obviously, you know, I understand that this is an extremely small sample size. I understand that we have seen Lovelady twice, right? And there's still time for things to get better. There's still time for him to figure something out here. And I believe that, you know, pitching in lower leverage situations should help with that a little bit. And this bullpen will eventually get better, right? Eric Swanson is going to come back. Ryan Burr is going to come back. Most likely, we will get to see someone like Mason Fluharty, if not this season, most certainly the next season. But with the way that things are looking, it may be sooner than we all expect here. And so this bullpen will eventually get better. But it's just pretty fascinating to see how much this depth is already being tested this early on in the season. And this just feels like a win that was left on the table for the Blue Jays. It was a pretty winnable game, all things considered. Just couldn't close it.
This text says from Peter in Calgary, Lovelady should be gone, lady. Okay, I like the puns will get me.
We all know.
I admit, like those are the jokes we're going to be made. Unfortunately, it's not always fun to pick on a guy, but that does. I admit that makes me chuckle. All right, let's go back to the phone line. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Let's go to Brad in Barrie. Brad, what's up?
Hey guys. So I get it. Like, things happen in ball games, but Schneider's not off the hook either here. Like, okay, guy, you send him in, you want to have another look at him, but he's essentially on a short leash anyways, based on his last performance. Walks a guy, hits a guy, hey, man, you're in a tight ball game. You're up by a run. You guys made that point. It's an excellent point. You got to pull him. Like, you can't try and ride that out. And then he hits another batter. Like, you're setting the table for a very strong hitting team you're playing against here. So I get it. Like, you know, we're going to, you know, blame the pitcher. And he did not pitch well. I mean, this is back-to-back. But at the end of the day, like, what's the pitching coach doing? And what's the conversation going on there? Because to me, he's on a short leash. You got to pull him out of that game. And not just because the way that he pitched game before, but essentially the circumstances. Like, Schneider's not off the hook on this one. Like, to me, you got to make a decision there.
Brad, what did you think of, because I know our producers were saying that, you know, you also wanted to comment on the starting rotation. Did you have a comment on Scherzer as well before I let you go?
Well, okay, yeah, and I don't want to tie you up too much because we've got a lot of things on the go here. But, I mean, listen, I got no problem with Matt Scherzer. I get it. He gives up a couple home runs early, but he settled down. Like, he did his job. And then, yeah, he's got a tweak there. You know what you get with a guy that's old like that. He's going to battle. He's going to bring a lot more to the table. He's going to help everybody in that bullpen. He's going to help all the pitchers. He's going to help your team. The guy's a champion. But at the end of the day, you know there's going to be games. He's only going to be able to give you 4 or 5 innings. Same with Gausman. Like, you start looking at some of these guys who are longer in the tooth. They've pitched done a lot of pitching. Like you guys pointed out, the middle relief is huge. But in saying that, the manager's not off the hook. You can't ride these guys. And when the game's on the line, continue to pitch them when they're hitting batters and loading, you know, setting the table for a strong lineup. Like, that's unacceptable, in my opinion.
Hey, Brad, I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us on Jays Talk. I really, really do appreciate it. So let's go to the second point first, because we talked a little bit about the bullpen, and we're going to keep doing it because there are a lot more texts and people want to keep calling in about it, with which they are certainly welcome to. But when it comes to the starting rotation, I'll half agree and disagree with Brad's point, because I think he's probably right that you won't be able to necessarily ride Scherzer, like, even if he was fully healthy, right? Like, you're not asking Scherzer to throw like 100 pitches in a game, right? I think Berríos threw 90 pitches in game one. I think Gausman yesterday threw 97. So are you really expecting, and again, maybe it's possible even at his age that Scherzer, I mean, it makes it sound like 40 is a million years old. It's not, right? He's certainly capable of it, but is it wise, knowing that he's had these injuries in the last couple of seasons that have now reared its ugly head again, do you want to push him? No. So you do have to have contingency plans for that. Feels like they didn't have maybe appropriate ones necessarily.
Right.
I will disagree on Gausman, though, just because Gausman has been pretty durable, all things considered. And again, I'm not saying you have to ride the guy to like 115, 120 pitches every single time out. I'm not sure that's a good idea for any pitcher, even the really young pitchers, right? But I think you can rely on Gausman. I feel good about saying that.
Yeah, for sure. He's especially because we are seeing, I think, just an improved version of Gausman this year. Last year had some issues for sure with injuries. Got a bit of a late start to the spring. He was kind of chasing something all season long. Figured it out in the second half. It was like he was finally caught up with whatever it was that that delayed his progression early on. And I think we're just seeing sort of more of what we saw in the second half of last season with him. And I don't see any reason for concern with his durability. The Blue Jays certainly don't. And Gausman has been very upfront all through all his career, all his time here with Toronto, saying or telling it exactly as it is and exactly where he is at. So, but I will say that the point about Scherzer helping in other ways, I think it needs to be considered here. Obviously, the biggest way and the most important way in which he can help this team is by taking the ball every 5 days.
Sure.
But, John Schneider and other people in that clubhouse have been very vocal about having Scherzer as a leader and the accountability that brings and the fact that he is the type of in-your-face guy who will tell you like it is and, challenge you to get better every single day. And Schneider even said something along the lines today of, sure, it's a good influence on the younger guys, but it weirdly rubs off more on guys like Jose Berríos and Kevin Gausman himself and even Chris Bassett, because these are guys that are veterans and they have been doing this for a while, and just having someone like Scherzer in that clubhouse elevates all of them to a different level, including the veterans, the more established guys. So pretty interesting conversation, but obviously it's one that we can only keep having if Scherzer finds a way to stay on the mound.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones, Jules. Let's go to Matthew in Hamilton. Matthew, what's up? Welcome to Jays Talk.
How's it going, guys? Happy opening weekend. Glad you're back. We missed you guys.
Appreciate you tuning in, Matt. What's up? What's on your mind today?
It's kind of funny. I like that we're all on the same page with Max Scherzer. We're all a little bit concerned here, but I want to point out one thing. I don't necessarily agree with the point made earlier that the Jays don't have a contingency plan if Scherzer goes down, right? That contingency plan is Yariel Rodriguez, but is that a good contingency plan? I don't think so. I'm not really sold on the guy. But for me, I'm just like, I guess I want to know your guys' level of concern with it. And then, you know, like what happens if, let's say, okay, well, Scherzer goes down, he can't pitch for a little while, he goes on the IL, and then Yariel takes the mound, and then let's just say he does absolutely nothing with it. Like, you know, he gets a start or two, and he just, you know, he completely fumbles the ball, no pun intended. But, you know, what would be that plan at that point? Right? Because then, okay, well, your contingency plan obviously falls here. Then, you know, if you're John Schneider, what would you do? So I definitely would love your guys' opinion on that.
Sure, Matt, appreciate the call, man. Thank you again for joining us, and thanks for tuning in. I think I remember saying to you during the spring, Jules, that when we weren't sure that Scherzer was going to make his first start of the season when this whole, all the news about the thumb injury, and then he was going to pitch in the minor league games, and he was kind of taken out of the spring rotation to pitch under more close supervision at different parts of the minor league spring training schedules. I said to you then that, all right, if Scherzer had to miss one of his starts, or if they weren't sure, they could go Berríos, Gausman, Bassett, Francis against the Orioles, and then against the Nationals, Scherzer's former team, one of his former teams, you could have him pitch the first game of that series on Monday. Or if he had to miss the start completely, you'd cobble together maybe a piggyback start for Weyrod and Yarbrough. And that we did see that a couple times last year, and it was all right. Like, it worked out all right, all things considered. It wasn't maybe something that was necessarily sustainable. But I said to you, maybe that's what we would see again. And I'd be fine with that. Once more, even though I know Yarbrough doesn't have overpowering stuff, but man, even if it is Weyrod, and again, I'm a little concerned about Weyrod specifically because in the spring he looked a little shaky. It was just one appearance to raise my hand on that. It was just one inning or whatever it was on Thursday, but he looked shaky again. So I think that did not necessarily instill me with a lot of confidence. I don't know about you, but I think for better or for worse, to Matt's point, that is the contingency plan, and I think it's a good point he brings up. Is it a good one? It's probably an all right one. I was a little more bullish on Rodriguez going into spring training, and then he had the spring that he did, and then I thought, okay, well, you know what? If you have to rely on Jake Bloss, maybe you can do that, and Bloss had an all right spring.
Right.
I would say he picked it up towards the end, so I'll give him some credit, right? But, you know, same thing about Eric Lauer. I don't know. It doesn't feel like there are a lot of really reliable options. It feels like there are a lot of question marks. So now, I'll say this. I mean, and I think we've all heard this before, and even I've said this before, Jules. I would say no team, maybe if you're the Dodgers, this applies to you. But outside of the Dodgers, even the Yankees, I'm not sure every team or most teams have their fifth starter spot like completely locked down, even though technically Scherzer is the third starter. But just one of their five spots is a little up in the air. And so, you know, that probably puts the Blue Jays on par with a lot of other teams, but it still feels like it was avoidable.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Sho. You look at, say, a team like the Yankees, right, who are ailing quite a bit, and the rotation is not at all where this team wanted it to be. Well, they scored 20 runs today. They hit 9 home runs. It's also, you know, you have to look at the other side of the ball. You have to look at the fact that, you know, yes, this was a fine offensive outing for the Blue Jays, but it will take the big bats in this lineup doing a little bit more in order to give them a chance to win. And from the reports that we're starting to get here out of the availabilities post-game from the Blue Jays, this is coming from Shai Davidi here, show, it looks like we may need to think, or the Blue Jays may need to think about a plan for Max Scherzer. Shai saying that his Scherzer says that his lat soreness is 100% related to the thumb. Felt discomfort in warm-ups, but tried to fight through it to save the bullpen. And he left the game when he felt, this is a quote, imminent danger of significant injury. And Scherzer adding that, I got to get this 100% before I pitch again, which I don't think will come in 5 days, show. This is something that has extended throughout the spring for him.
That's not good.
That is, I gotta say, that's not
that's not what you want to hear.
Not at all.
That's not what you want to hear. Yeah, that's tough, Jules. Because again, that does not lead me to believe that he will be ready for his next start. Right? Like, I mean, yeah. I don't think that's an overreaction to hearing that.
Yeah,
I would say. And if that's the case, then we're gonna have to talk more about Yariel Rodriguez or Lauer or Blas or any of these guys down in the minors, because there's not a lot of other options, really.
Not a ton of other options.
Do you really want to go with bullpen days, like, this early in the season? I personally would say no, obviously.
Yeah, especially with the schedule, the way that it's laid out right now, that sounds like pretty much a recipe for a disaster beyond whatever day ends up being a bullpen day. I would be very against that at this point, show, which, you know, opens up the question, who do you call upon? Will they actually go with Y-Rod here, or is this a scenario where an Eric Lauer or Jake Blas could make their way up to the major leagues?
That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's take a quick break here, Jules. And on the other side, I do want to get to at least one positive, and I think everyone would agree that the one positive from this game was Bo Bichette.
Yes.
Boy, he has looked great, and he looked phenomenal today. Yeah. So we got to spend at least a couple of minutes talking about Bo, because, I mean, the guy went 4-for-4 with 2 doubles and a walk. I mean, you can't not talk about Bo on a day like today, even though they have lost. So let's do some Bo talk on the other side. Are people, should people start to come around a little bit more on Bo extension talks, maybe? Is that something we should be doing a little more of? Let's have that conversation on the other side. Still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. Again, that's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. We're back in a flash. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Over three games, are you learning? First game, the top of three of the order were 0-for-10. Today, 0-for-11 at the bottom three. Are you learning the construction of your batting order and lessons from that?
Yeah, you learn from every day.
Wow, short and sweet from John Schneider. Is that really all he said? Wow, John Schneider. All right, a little testy on game three of 162.
Wow.
Well, it's a long season, John. It's a long season, man.
Well, he has a point. You do learn from it every day, and I'm sure that the last thing that he wants to discuss right now is 0-for-11 with 6 strikeouts, right?
Oh, that's pretty funny. That's John Schneider chatting with the media after a 9-5 loss to the Orioles. Blue Jays are now 1-2 on the season. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. We're here until the top of the hour. Still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can always text us on the People's Text Line, 590-590. That's the People's Text Line. It's always open, and standard data and messaging rates may apply. Just remember to leave your name and location. Before we get back to the text and back to the callers, Blue Jays Talk is brought to you by Bet365. You can download the Bet365 app for today's baseball odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. You know, Jules, the big story, I think, outside of Blue Jays land today was in New York. I don't know how much of that game you caught. I was kind of keeping tabs on it, so to speak, when we were doing the out-of-town scoreboards during the game. And the beginning of the game, Nestor Cortes Jr., former Yankee,
former
of course.
Yankee.
You go to the World Series with him on your roster just last year. He comes back, now plays for the Brewers after the Devin Williams trade that brought Williams to be the Yankees' new closer. And he goes out there. Paul Goldschmidt, Cody Bellinger, and Aaron Judge on literally 3 pitches go back to back to back. It is the first time since at least 2000 that has happened to start a ball game. And the reason they say at least 2000 MLB stats is because the data only goes back that far.
Yep.
So I got to think there's a real chance. Maybe that's the first time that's ever happened, or maybe in a much longer period than the last 25 years. But that's pretty incredible. The Yankees won 20-9 today.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that if it has happened before, you can find a headline somewhere, in some sort of archive or something like that. But pretty unique, pretty historic. It's kind of like when you set the MLB The Show difficulty level to the lowest possible, and then you're just mashing home runs. I think one of the judges' home runs is like 468 feet.
That third home run, like the first home run, which was the third home run of the first inning, was 463 feet.
Which is just ridiculous, just absurd. But that is what that offense can do. Yeah. So who cares if the rotation is not where it's supposed to be?
Yeah, Judge hit three home runs. He had eight total RBI. I think he actually just missed hitting the fourth home run by like a foot, essentially. He was a foot away from having a four home run day. Judge is ridiculous. Judge has now hit more home runs in a single game than the Blue Jays have hit all season. So there you go. Well, that's a fun stat for you. I wanted to talk a little bit about Bo Bichette.
Right.
And we heard from John Schneider talking to the media just now. Let's hear a little bit more from John. Here is the skipper talking about Bo last year.
Yeah, kind of a carryover from spring training. I feel like his at-bats are really competitive, and the most impressive part for me is he's taken really borderline pitches and really zeroing in on a ball that he can hit hard, which I think is kind of the final step for Bo to go from great to elite. And it's kind of showing right now. So I think he's getting his good swings off when he needs to, and not swinging at pitchers' pitches, you know. So I think you're seeing the results of that.
Bo Bichette, 4-for-4. With two doubles and a walk today. Everything came off the bat hard. One of those doubles, the last one late in the game, was maybe a foot or two from being a home run just off the fence by the home bullpen there. I mean, like I said this to you before the break, but I got to think if this keeps up, and maybe we're there already for some people, which is totally fair, but if this keeps up, I'm guessing the extend Bo Bichette crowd is going to get a lot louder. I spoke about this with Roger LaJoie on opening day when we did the extended version of Jay's talk, but maybe we should be talking more about that for Bo.
Yeah, it's interesting too, Sho, because 2 years ago, Vlad has sort of the down year, quote unquote. It was still pretty good year all things considered, but falls short of expectations, let's put it like that. And Bo was the main driver of that offense, and we did sort of see that flip-flop a little bit in which people were really, really high on Bo and not so much on Vladdy. Well, last year happens. Bo struggles. He gets injured. His extension talks kind of get put on pause a little bit just because of the nature of the season that he had. And Vladdy carries the offense that this team displayed last season. And now if you get those two guys going, it kind of brings us back a little bit to the good old days in many ways, and it could mean good things for the offense and for this team moving forward. It's just a matter of putting it all together. But absolutely, you look at what Bo did today, you look at what he did yesterday as well, just the swings that he is taking right now, the fact that he seems to be very much in time with his swings. And to Schneider's point, swinging at good pitches, which is something that we haven't seen necessarily with consistency from Bo in seasons prior. He's still going to swing at pitches outside the zone sometimes, but the fact of the matter is that he can, because he can still make contact and make good contact with those pitches. But it is still about picking and choosing, first of all, a game situation and approach, and second of all, what pitch actually makes sense to swing at any given moment.
Taylor from Kitchener on the text line says, forget Vlad, pay Bo. Vladdy had an AB that ended in an out where there was not a ball thrown remotely close to the strike zone. There's a text here from Ian in Ridgeville. Love the start for Bo. Ian also says, time to release Lovelady. He should never have made the team over Yarbrough. And there was another one that I was just reading. Where is it? I can't find it now. But it was about. Oh, here it is. Mark from Belleville. Bo definitely deserves an extension. He's the guy you want at the plate in a big situation. And I think to kind of summarize all those texts, I'm not sure you necessarily need to completely forget about Vladdy. But I will say Bo's start to the season, just in terms of how everything is coming off the bat hard, he's seeing the ball as well. I think you wanted to also see that from Vladdy. And I think a big part of this too, Joel, is, and you tell me if I'm wrong, is just because, I mean, certainly it's a partial media creation as well, but, you know, a big part of any conversation about Vladdy is that is the dollar figure he's asking for or looking for, what he'll get, and comparing it to Soto and comparing it to Otani. And you have all these gargantuan numbers that are almost, for the average person, completely unfathomable to even think about in your brain as a real number. And that's what Vladdy's asking for. And I said this to Raj, and I even said this to you during the spring, but it seemed pretty likely that unless Vladdy came out and had an absolutely torrid start to the season, we would get texts like that, right? And I don't think it's unfair, because if you're going to ask for the moon, you gotta play like the star, right? And he's been fine so far. He's been all right. I don't think he's been bad, but he's definitely, like, I think, again, 4-for-4 with 2 doubles and a walk today from Bo. You want that also from Vladdy.
Absolutely. We have also seen Vladdy sort of take maybe a little bit of a slower start to the season. That has also kind of become a thing with him. You know, usually it's those at bats where maybe he tries to do a little bit too much, where when there is a runner in scoring position and the game is close, and then kind of the batting average starts to creep up, and you see, you know, the good contact come back, and then finally you see the power, and then finally you see the star quality and the clutch and everything like that. But I think at this point, I at least have come to sort of expect a little bit of a lag in Vladdy's start to the season, just because it's not unprecedented, right, Joe? And we know that he has the talent to turn it around. We know that he is putting in the effort to be a main contributor every day, like he was yesterday. You know, it's a little bit of a short memory here, but, you know, he was a difference maker just in last night's game. So, yeah, I don't know. I think whenever I see those, you know, ugly swings and the strikeouts and all of that this early in the season with Vladdy specifically, I still go, oh, okay, well, that sounds about right with him.
There's a text here from Grant in Regina, which I like. I think this speaks to your point and kind of what the other texters were talking about, what we're talking about. But it says here, switching gears, I'm a big Vladdy guy, and I hope the Jays re-sign him. Having said that, asking for $500 million means you need to step up more often than not. With men on base in March and April, we need doubles and home runs as opposed to sac flies and groundouts. These games matter early in the season. With the big dollars comes the pressure to step up. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And I think that's a totally fair thing to say, right? If you're going to ask for a lot of money,
I think
we talked about Judge earlier, for example. That's what I mean. Again, no one, who's going to hit 3 home runs and get 8 RBI every single game? Literally no one. But
right. But
I think that kind of ceiling level performance or something close to it is, I think, expected. And I think that's a fair expectation if you're asking for a lot of money.
And listen, when was it? Was it last year, 2 years ago, that Aaron Judge was pretty ruthlessly booed by the Yankees crowd? You know, it happens. And guys sometimes do have slow starts, and they do go through slumps, and all of that is part of the games. And obviously, you know, fans have every right to voice their displeasure. I think, you know, as Yankees fans did with a superstar like Aaron Judge as well. But it's kind of the nature of baseball. That said, you want to be confident in your star player when that clutch moment shows up and he is stepping up to the plate. And it's not necessarily the case with Vladdy, especially in a month like April. He can still be the difference maker, show, and he will be more often than not. But I also understand, I guess, a little bit of the frustration of the fan that wants to see more than a sack fly in a big moment.
I think if this continues, and this is from Jimmy in Toronto on the text line, I know it's only 3 games, but Vladdy's not playing like a $500 million hitter. Judge had 3 home runs today, and he makes less. And by the way, I got to think, and I know this is just how it worked out for Judge, because he made his major league debut when he was a little older. It took a little while for him to become the most feared hitter in the American League, and now he's that guy, and he performs like that guy pretty regularly. But do you think that Judge kicks himself for not signing like a 1-year deal just to get to a point where he could sign a deal after Juan Soto signed a deal? Because he signed for what, like $300 something million, and
right,
it still feels like kind of a bargain, honestly, given what the Yankees get from Judge vis-a-vis basically anyone else, essentially.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting discussion. I mean, if you're going to play this game and be successful, you can't really look back all
no,
that
I
much.
Know, I know,
but Yeah, but, you know, it is pretty absurd where the market was and where it is, and looking at what a guy like Aaron Judge is making, it does not necessarily make sense in today money, right?
I also wanted to get to with the Blue Jays too. I can only think if this keeps up, that for Vladdy specifically, that when you get to, like, if we're having this discussion with Blair and Barker on Friday's edition of Jays Talk, then I think you'll be able to check off the is Vladdy capable of being the aircraft carrier on, like, Jays Talk bingo. I think that'll be it.
Oh,
you'll be able to check that off when Barker gets back on the air. That's one of his favorite sayings. Aircraft carrier, is Vladdy capable of being aircraft carrier? And I love that saying from Barker because it's a great question. And I think we think the answer to that question is yes after last year.
Yeah.
So you want to see him be the aircraft carrier this year. Let me ask you this before we go. We have a couple minutes left here.
Sure.
So I you know, contract forecasting is always difficult because and I think it's even more difficult now because of the Juan Soto contract and to a lesser extent Shohei Ohtani, but I still think Ohtani's in his own little category because
right.
of the kind of player he is, and you know, he's from a market that I think makes it worth it to, like, essentially, again, using air quotes, overpay for him. So Ohtani is, again, his own special business case, but Juan Soto, I think, did change permanently to a certain extent how we view a lot of these contracts, and we'll see what Vladdy gets, whether it's from the Blue Jays or another team in free agency. We'll see what Kyle Tucker gets when he gets the free agency yep. next season as well. But, you know, Bo is right up there in that conversation, and the contract comparable I draw, Jules,
yep.
is Corey Seager.
Yes.
When Corey Seager left the Dodgers, he was 27 when he signed that deal with the Rangers. It was in 2022. It was for $325 million over 10 years, so $32.5 million a year. I can't help but think, and Bo, when he signs his contract, whether it's with the Jays or someone else, will also be 27. And again, I know Seager and Bo are different players. I just can't help but think that if you're Bo's agent, you say to anyone, whether it's the Blue Jays or someone else, that I want, my ask starts at what Corey Seager got,
right.
and it should be more than that. Like, I mean, I know 2022 was only 3 years ago, but you take the Seager deal, account for inflation to a little bit. You know, I mean, like Mookie or. I think Francisco Lindor actually is the highest paid shortstop right now. Maybe Mookie Betts is up there as well, but neither of them make over $400 million. So
right.
do you just give Bo $400 million and call it a day? Is that what you do?
Yeah, that is in itself going to be a pretty fascinating discussion show because obviously everyone knows what the bat is capable of with Bo, but if the defense continues to shine the way it has early on this season, then it does raise the ceiling a little bit for that deal too. It's still sort of a question of can Bo just once he signs you know if he leaves say in free agency and signs with another team, will it be as an everyday shortstop or will it be in sort of like a more hybrid role? Well, with the way that his defense is going, I believe that any team would feel really comfortable having him as their everyday shortstop, and so that can also, you know, increase the value of the deal. And you're right, Joe, that 22, you said, right? 2022. That's not very long ago at all, but it seems like there have been so many seismic changes to the market
yeah.
that you have to believe that that's where the asking price starts.
And I mean, if there's a potential lockout next year, which I know the CBA is up for discussion, and I mean, I certainly hope that there is not one because that would suck. But I mean, if there is one or we're having that discussion at the very least, then I wonder if that makes players a little more antsy about signing a deal. I mean, it kind of happened with Marcus Semien when he signed with the Rangers. He was, I think, one of the, if not the first guy to sign a big deal that year before that, like, very, very mini lockout, essentially, when the season was delayed by, like, a week and a half or whatever it ended up being. And I wonder if, I mean, you always wonder if that plays a factor into how much players do try and force the issue, right? Whether it's like trading off a little bit of money for more security.
Yeah.
Bo and Vladdy and Kyle Tucker as well probably don't have to make that decision because, like, whoever it is going to pay them just boatloads of cash.
Right on. It is going to be a fascinating discussion, and you're right. It's, you know, these negotiations between league and players will add some pretty interesting wrinkles to free agency in a year that obviously that matters more than most for a team like the Blue Jays.
Well, Jules, that does it for us. This was fun. I guess we'll do it all over again tomorrow.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you so much. It's so, so nice to be back at the ballpark with you. I love being in the studio, but this is nicer, isn't it?
Yeah, being at the ballpark is a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing this again to wrap up the series tomorrow. Blue Jays baseball, before we go, is brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Halifax and Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Austin Mackey, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. Like I said earlier, Jules and I are back tomorrow for another edition of Jays Talk to wrap up the series here at the Dome. Blair and Barker will be back on Monday. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.